battle to the Black Lizard.
I want this country to realize that we stand on the edge of oblivion.
I want every man, woman, and child to understand how close we are to chaos.
Can't get no sleep.
We're hot.
Okay, this is Alternatives to Thought. Having a little bit of trouble speaking today. But in this segment, we present the views of frauds, quacks, lunatics, and crackpots, whether it be secretive organizations and their path towards global domination, or the idea that the universe grants wishes. For each segment, we'll explore these views based on the topic that we're discussing. And this week...
I was wishing you were going to do that, actually.
Do what?
This segment, and the universe granted my wish.
That's proof. That's right.
Yeah. Did you ask?
Thank you. This has been Alternatives to Thought. Tune in next week.
So in our last episode, we talked about global warming and we talked about geoengineering. And it turns out that these frauds, quacks, lunatics, and crackpots actually have quite a lot to say about this and just about everything else. So first, we're going to talk about conspiracies regarding geoengineering.
Oh, I love conspiracy theories.
Perfect. There are those that believe that despite the controversy surrounding real-world implementations of geoengineering, that this is already being implemented. Chemicals are being deliberately sprayed into the atmosphere, they say, and they are right over our head, visibly evident, and seem to the untrained eye to be innocent condensation trails or contrails left in the wake of jet airliners. These chemical trails...
I have heard this.
Yeah, so have I. A little bit.
Chemical trails, or chemtrails for short, are secretive attempts at the government to control weather, whether it be for a purpose of warfare, population control. Maybe they just want to increase the value of homes in a certain area.
Population control? How do you control the population with the weather?
Well, you send Hurricane Katrina, and then you depopulate the area.
Or you...
Droughts.
Increase or decrease housing values for people to move.
Crazy.
All kinds of things. Or you could use it for warfare.
You probably just don't remember because the men in black neuralize you when they're done, but I mean...
According to William Thomas, a champion of the chemtrail movement and someone who's actually made it quite popular over the last decade, in a History Channel documentary about chemtrails, is quoted as saying, "I think most of us in North America have been wondering about these plumes crisscrossing the sky in grid patterns, rows, and now familiar X's. And many of us have wondered what these trails are," end quote. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone inquire as to what those might be.
No. This was on the History Channel?
It was.
Well, that station has gone downhill.
Yeah. Well, I mean, stupidly, I've always just thought they came from planes, but, I mean, I'm an idiot, so.
But planes don't cross each other, Nick.
That's true. Don't cross the streams. Don't cross the planes.
That's right. That would be bad.
That would be bad.
I'm about to explain your error in judgment. You see, we are uninformed. There's things we don't know about the behavior of these condensation trails.
Such as?
Well, first let me just say that it's not just controlling the weather. These have been implicated in attempts at eugenics, chemical warfare, and even mind control.
Yes. As we all know, the secret Nazis had a program.
Secret Nazis?
Ooh. Yes.
That's even
They're different from the public Nazis that you know about.
It's even more sinister.
They were the SSS. That was a little bit different.
Anyway, the way that you can tell the chemtrails that are bad is the ones that loiter. Genuine chemtrails, according to William Thomas and other people who support this idea that the government is releasing chemicals from planes, is that regular condensation trails composed of water vapor behind a regular airliner jet dissipate very quickly. These chemtrails, persist for very long periods of time, according to these conspiracy theorists.
What in the world?
Yeah.
Although, isn't it true that planes are technically giving off chemicals, right? Their engines?
Well, yeah, they're fumes from the engines. But wait, just time out a second. I hate to disrupt the flow, but I'm really puzzled by something. They're saying that you can tell when there are chemicals released by how long the trails continue to – you can still see them, basically.
Right. If they persist for several hours or a day, they are chemtrails.
Wouldn't that just be based on how much wind there is dissipating it?
Norm, you have so much to learn.
That's
that's just science. Yeah.
That's a very simple explanation. Right. Almost too simple.
Okay.
No, I mean, we all know that, you know, when people loiter, they're up to something. Why shouldn't clouds be subject to the same principle?
Oh, my God. I gotcha.
But to be honest, this principle that there are two kinds of contrails, those that persist and those that don't, and therefore they differ in composition, and specifically the ones that linger are bad and the ones that don't linger are not bad. I spent many hours searching for a basis for this assumption, and I found none.
I'm sorry that you spent so much of your time having to search for this.
You know, even if it were a more dense release of chemicals,
yeah,
that still would not have a significant effect on how long that trail persists.
Sure.
Because, you know, up in, you know, planes fly at, what, 30,000 feet approximately?
24 to 29,000 feet is where contrails typically become evident.
A little lower. The wind is very high up there. So even if you released really, really dense amounts of chemicals, it would dissipate quickly.
It tends to get around, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not following even the beginning of this, but okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm conveying the information here.
No, hey, trust me, I'm not picking on you.
In fact, they've been observed to eventually spread out and form their own artificial clouds. Sometimes they will crisscross and combine with each other and forming their own clouds. And this is all very, to these people, it seems very bizarre for contrails to be behaving this way.
Yes, ignorance often is bizarre. So.
And despite the seeming kind of bizarre, many government agencies have received enough concerns, enough phone calls, and even petitions from citizens to address the idea that chemtrails or chemicals are being released over human populations for whatever purpose. Some people say weather control. Some people just think it's making them sick and they don't know why. But NASA, the EPA, and several other organizations have all uniformly denied the existence of chemtrails.
Well, they would, wouldn't they?
Of course, it's a likely
story.
These
people should stop giving the government ideas. We don't want them going, hey.
This is what they would want you to think if it were true. The term chemtrail and the conspiracy itself seem to have appeared between 1997 and 1999 and subsequently driven to popularity by William Thomas. It is then that these loitering cloud-forming chemtrails.
Wait a second. Loitering cloud-forming chemtrails.
Yes.
LCCT.
Sure.
These LCCT. Lines in the sky that stay there.
Yeah, and their adverse effects. That's when they began to reach public awareness. That's when people started noticing them.
Okay.
And it's interesting that this abnormal contrail behavior, these kinds of behaviors, are explained in the 2007 edition of Encyclopedia Britannica. But they don't just explain the behavior. They actually give an explanation for why it occurs. It says, contrails, a streamer of clouds, sometimes observed behind an airplane flying in clear, cold, humid air. It forms upon condensation of water vapor produced by the combustion of fuel in the airplane engines. When the ambient relative humidity is high, the resulting ice crystal plume may last for several hours. The trail may be distorted by winds, and sometimes it spreads outwards to form a layer of cirrus cloud. Now, in some ways, this fits with the conspiracy in that it invokes simple things like humidity and wind to explain some of the bizarre behavior that has been cited about these contrails. But at the same time, it was in 2007, after the invention of contrails, the coinage of the term, and the concern grew about. But is there any evidence that these kinds of things were observed from contrails ever?
They certainly would have been there. I mean,
don't you believe your own eyes?
Planes are not inherently different, you know, over the past, 50, 60, 70 years probably.
Right.
Yeah. Commercial airlines.
And in fact, it turns out that the implementation of chemtrails corresponds exactly with the advent of jet-fueled flight.
That's
really?
That's just a coincidence. I don't see how not.
Wait a second. Tell me, when I missed something. When was the term?
The term was coined.
When?
But between 1997 and 1999.
Well, that's not when jet-powered flight started.
Right. So the cover-up was actually quite effective until then.
Oh, you're talking from... Okay. You're switching from the real Chalmer to the...
Yeah.
I gotcha. Maybe we should do like a different voice or something.
Well, you could tell because the evil Chalmer has a goatee.
I gotcha.
Sure.
So does the good Chalmer.
That's true.
Yeah.
he's just always evil. That's what I was getting at.
Gotcha. Okay, so, yeah, they were covering it up until then, which, of course, how do you do that? Because, I mean, it's in the sky.
Well, it's it doubles as mind control. This is all very consistent.
I'm convinced. I don't know why you're being so mean about this, Mark.
Well, it's, I mean, this idea of wind and humidity, it's just too simple.
Right.
Well,
sure.
Once again, science ruins everything by having a nice logical explanation for it.
Yeah, where's the wonder?
Sure. Right. Okay, so that's it for chemtrails.
All right.
Aww. Any more questions about chemtrails?
So let me get this straight. The tie-in with our topic, and I think I saw a reference to this as well. There are some people that are cautious about the idea of geoengineering in any form,
mm-hmm.
even of the forms that you know we talked about in our episode, which would be positive, you know, things sure. to cool the planet. There are people that are going to worry about this because they associate geoengineering with this odd control conspiracy theory of how the government is doing things right over our heads to us.
Well, sure. It's the sort of, you think it's bad now.
Or right.
You yeah. think it's bad, it's actually worse.
Yeah.
It's already being done.
Yeah.
Interestingly, though...
geoengineering clearly is, you know, as we talked about, is being done all the yeah. time. And
yeah. in fact, scientists have been interested in the effect that contrails have on local climate.
Right.
Because you are creating cloud cover.
Yep.
And they do form a layer of cirrus cloud.
Here's what I don't understand. Where are they getting the moisture from? Is it from the chemical reaction in the engine, or is it just taking the moisture and that the engine sucks in and concentrating it?
I'm actually not sure.
Yeah, I'm not.
Because if it's the latter, then obviously it's not going to have any net effect.
I think there might be water being sucked in and concentrated, and it gets heated up, and then it hits the cold air and condensates.
But that's the same water that's in the air already. So how could that have a significant effect?
I don't know.
Well, because, you see, the engine has chemicals that they add to it. You see, and then...
Well, I think that the exhaust from an airplane is similar to the exhaust from your car. I mean, it's
yeah.
combustion. It's jet fuel is slightly different than the gasoline you put in your car. But I don't think it's, you know, a different kind of stuff. It's still petroleum.
Right. So important safety tip, do not leave your garage door shut when your airplane is running
right.
inside of
it. Right, that would be bad. Unless you want to.
Right, right. Leave a good right. suicide note then.
Right, right.
Crazy. Yeah, essentially there was an artificial distinction made between persisting
right.
contrails and non-persisting contrails, and for some reason people associated that with that with basically everything that's ever gone wrong and could go wrong. Could
yeah.
go wrong.
And you know, this is one of these things that the phenomena that people are looking at, that it allows people to read into it because it has these variabilities.
Yeah.
Right? If you – and I see this over and over again. Whenever you look at something, if it has a certain amount of variability, there will be people that will read a pattern into that
sure.
and then extrapolate from that pattern. Mm-hmm. Right? We talk about this, you know, pattern recognition, pareidolia, things like that.
Yeah.
Well, and if you have an area with a high amount of air traffic, you get multiple trails going across the sky, and they kind of get right. blown around, and every once in a while they form weird patterns like grids
yeah.
and X's.
Yeah. And how long they persist is variable. So,
yeah. And it seems to be dependent on the amount of ambient moisture in the air.
Yeah,
which
totally.
Seems... somehow consistent with the way that things behave.
And wind. Right on.
Okay.
What's
so
next?
Next, we're going to look at this conspiracy is the idea that pro-global warming scientists are just protecting their funding. This is all a desperate bid to continue to bring in funding for this pro-global warming agenda because they're afraid if they research anything else, they won't get the money for it.
Right.
This was mentioned in a documentary called The Greenhouse Conspiracy. There's a organization called the Cooler Heads Coalition, a consumer interest organization that's dedicated to sort of disbanding the myth of global warming. And they've also said that scientists are just doing this to protect their funding. Mm-hmm. According to Martin Durkin, maker of the documentary, The Great Global Warming Scandal, global warming is a multi-billion dollar industry and was invented by anti-industrial environmentalists and scientists protecting their funding.
By both of them, or like scientists working with them, or are the scientists...
Well, it would seem odd that anti-industrialists would be working with scientists looking for money.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, it's one of those backroom deals, just minus the cigars.
Right.
It's a weird way of them admitting that we don't fund science enough. So sure. Science would obviously have to protect itself.
Yeah, and just, you know, right off the bat, the idea that a significant number of scientists would research something that they knew was pointless.
Sure.
Just to keep the money going to continue to research something that is
pointless
is really bizarre, actually. This seems to me to be the kind of thing that is put out by someone who has actually not met too many scientists. Because yeah. I've met a fair number of scientists, and these guys, you know, they would yell at their mother if they thought that she was wrong. You know? I mean, they're just the kind of people that are really interested in digging in the truth. Are they all perfect? Absolutely not. No. But
look, scientists are like philosophers. It's a type of philosophy, I think. I mean, right. It's concerned wholly with the truth. That's the entire point of it. Yeah. So
there may be some that are small number that are deluded in what they're doing. You know, sure. A scientist working on cold fusion or something, but.
All those string theory whack jobs out there.
Well, yeah, and there's
just kidding.
There's really no reason to assume that research into global warming is more likely to be awarded funding. There's lots of topics that are awarded funding,
yeah.
Environmental issues, and
yeah.
There are many scientists that are qualified to do research into multiple areas. They often do.
Yeah.
So, this one doesn't really make sense.
No, not when you have panels of scientists across, you know, multiple countries getting together on committees and agreeing on general patterns and, you know, people supervising them and them and submitting work to peer-reviewed articles, et cetera. I mean, you know, come on.
No. But my favorite part of this claim, though, is that this is a multi-billion dollar industry invented by anti-industrialists.
Right.
That seems a bit odd. It's very industrial to invent an entire market.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I'm not saying that there's any truth to the idea that, you know, global warming is real as being sponsored by folks like that.
Yeah.
But certainly people that, you know, people latch on to the idea of global warming and use that to forward their anti-corporate agenda. Absolutely. Right. Yeah. And I think that, you know, the, you know, layman level environmentalists movement is full of people that are
right.
Anti-globalization, anti-corporation, anti-big money, et cetera.
And that sort of thing just kind of lends, you know, a conspiracy theory like this fuel, I would say, you know. And I think it's also kind of speaks to the general layman's kind of a lack of understanding of just what the scientific method is in the process. I mean, it's very difficult to how would you even fake a global thing like that? I mean,
it's always possible that they're wrong, right? But science acknowledges that.
Right.
But the idea that there are people that are intentionally, that's kind of ridiculous. I mean, that number of scientists.
This is a very popular.
But then again, if we could fake the moon landing,
maybe we should do an episode on the moon landing.
It's very popular for people to mention this idea that scientists are just protecting their funding. There's a big anti. If you're against global warming, you're less likely to get funding. You could even lose your position at a university.
Yeah.
In fact, there's a United States Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works Minority Report updated in 2009. Cites approximately 700 scientists skeptical of various claims of global warming. What's interesting about this is that many of these quoted scientists are listed as having Nobel Prizes, relevant and impressive qualifications in mm-hmm. the areas of ecological phenomenon,
mm-hmm.
Atmospheric phenomenon, weather, meteorology.
Right.
And it seems that they basically got the cream of the crop, which in a academic environment that's extremely hostile towards people skeptical of global warming seems kind of odd that all these people would be so very successful.
Right. And I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that the information you're talking about scientists that are skeptical in general, not in general. The exact thing I want to say is that they're skeptical of specific kinds of claims within climatology about global warming, such as, you know, the effects, rate of expansion of water, time to, you know, certain levels of sea rise or time to the tipping point, those kinds of things. It's my understanding that those are the specifics are what these kinds of scientists are debating. The general idea that we're causing global warming is not debated by these.
Sure. I mean, I'm skeptical that Iceland's going to sink if the ice melts.
Right.
Norm, I have a question for you. So, I've heard other people talk about the idea that there are, you know, people who get tossed out of academia for going against the grain. You see a lot of people saying things like because I'm a creationist and I don't accept this wacky theory of evolution, I was fired. But, you know, as you're someone in that kind of teaching environment, do you think it's okay that should we make sure that teachers actually don't believe bullshit? I mean, I think personally that we should. I mean, I think that if you have teachers who are trying to teach a subject like biology and they don't understand certain basic facts about biology, like, I don't know, evolution, then I would say that should call into question whether or not they should be allowed to teach it. And I don't think that's like a witch hunt to get rid of people. But
you can teach something that you don't believe in. Yeah. And the thing is that you something I'm actually going to answer a question that you didn't ask, which is it common in academia to, you know, put pressure on people to believe a certain way at risk of their jobs? And the answer is no. In fact, it's the opposite.
That's
it's very extremely difficult to get rid of someone, even if they are wacky.
Yeah.
Very difficult. I know of philosophers. I know of people in other fields that have really wacky beliefs. They might seem cooler, but I know of philosophers that are young Earth creationists.
Yeah,
and they don't get fired.
Well,
and I'm kind of with you. I kind of wish maybe it would be easier to get rid of people in academia that do have wildly fringe beliefs or wildly kind of unfounded beliefs. But, you know, once you start going down that road, that is dangerous. So it's the opposite, really. You know, as far as funding is concerned, there are so many different sources of funding.
Yeah.
You know, you could believe just about anything. Find some organization that would be willing to give you a grant. If it was a fringe idea, you probably would get very enthusiastic people who would love for you to do research on that topic. I find this in philosophy a lot, specifically with philosophers that are offering arguments for the existence of God. They get funding readily from organizations, you know, church organizations or conservative organizations.
How's that working out for them?
Well, they go on lecture circuits. And you know what? I got to say that even though I don't agree with these philosophers, I'm glad that they're doing it because they're representing an argument that I think is bad, but there's a lot to be learned about looking at bad arguments.
Right.
So I have no problem with it, but it's kind of the opposite of what this conspiracy kind of mind is proposing.
Sure. Yeah. This is the idea that if you're against the status quo, you won't get awarded.
Yeah. It's just not plausible.
That's good. You have people who support pseudoscience who have legitimate PhDs in relevant topics.
Yeah.
But ultimately a PhD is awarded on the basis of the research you do as a graduate student.
Right, not what you're doing after you get the PhD.
They're not looking at the entirety of your belief system regarding that particular subject. They're looking at the specific thesis and research papers that you did.
And in philosophy, I know that there are some that go through the graduate programs and they start out as conservative Christians and they go through the programs and basically tell people what they want to hear and, you know, jump through the hoops and end up getting the credential of PhD or master's, it depends on what they want. And then after that, they use that degree to promote their original Christian agenda. And, you know, I'm not trying to pick on religion here, but I'm just using this as an example. You're absolutely right. Getting the PhD, having the credential, is not automatically, you know, making what you're doing after you get the PhD legitimate.
Right. It's almost like they want to be able to appeal to an authority.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, they want to appeal in the case of Christian philosophers, the strong feeling is that they want to appeal to the people, the lost sheep, if you will, that are in academia, either, you know, young students in bachelor's programs or even grad students that still are amenable to religious belief, but they've lost their way.
And it's easier to appeal to those people if you could say, look, I have a PhD hanging on my wall.
Exactly.
They don't just give those things away.
So. Exactly. Now, I won't go so far as to say getting a PhD doesn't mean anything. I think it does mean something. You do learn quite a bit, and I don't think it should be discarded. But like James Randi says, a PhD is not an inoculation against stupidity.
Yeah, and he's certainly made a lot of PhDs look pretty stupid.
Yes.
Reputable PhDs who certainly aren't stupid.
Yeah.
Okay, so the next conspiracy is the idea that global warming is a tool to bring about world domination and profit. And I mentioned profit a minute ago, but these are a little bit more specific. So the first one, according to Republican Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe, I don't know if I'm saying that right or if he's still the Oklahoma senator. But he believes some supporters of global warming initiatives like the Kyoto Protocol are really interested in global governance.
Let's hope he's not the senator anymore.
He's clearly not in the in crowd of politics. Maybe he just feels left out of this global governance.
Is this like the New World Order thing that you hear people talking about?
I think so.
World domination!
Yeah, it is. The Illuminati,
stuff like that.
Sure. I'm hard pressed to imagine how people believing in global warming would allow you to take over.
That's the bizarre.
World. This is an exact quote. The Kyoto Protocol are really interested in global
Kyoto
are really interested in global governance. You can figure that one out.
Well, okay, now wait a second. I hate to do this, but sure, I'm going to indulge it. Global warming is an issue.
It's your brain, man.
Global warming is an issue that has to be handled globally.
Sure.
Right? Because, if the United States and European countries were to cut carbon emissions, but India and China were not, that's not going to make much difference. So you have to get everybody together. And if you're going to restrict carbon emissions, you need to do this through legislation. You need to actually have policies that make it illegal to emit a certain amount. Following me so far? This beer is making me quite full. Good.
I suppose you can always just have Bono sing a song about it too. And
That's not gonna stop people that don't want to stop already.
Well, so
hang on. Let me just So if you're going to solve the problem of global warming by cutting carbon emissions, you're going to need legislation. It needs to be global in order to work. So that means you need to have a organization, a government that actually has teeth, that has power over every other country to control carbon emissions. And once you do that, well, they can start controlling other things.
Well, but then again, if you look at the original claim, is that the people who are supporting global warming initiatives are really interested in global governance. That global warming is a means to an end of achieving some kind of global power.
Oh, right.
Well, in that case, I want to know when I get my cut because I believe in global warming. So.
Now I can understand that in order to solve the issue, you might need global collaboration.
Right.
But this more seems like he's saying that global warming is a means of achieving power over some other aspect of
our
government.
Right. Yes. Well, it's a conspiracy theory. I would say on the plausibility, it's not completely zero.
Oh, no. Not at all.
But, I don't know that you would establish world domination through getting people to screw in fluorescent light bulbs.
That's the last thing that they'd expect.
That
it's a subtle kind of power.
I gotcha. And, of course, this is assuming that a form of global governance did not include checks and balances.
Yeah.
That make it to where it's, what's the big deal about having one government, actually? I think eventually it'd be a great idea for there to be one government.
It works in Star Trek, I think, but let's do it.
Yeah.
Assuming, again, there are checks and balances, you're not having to worry about corruption and usurpation of power any more than you are in your own country.
But if this global governance is not dangerous, then why are they keeping it a secret? It seems that at every turn, they seem to eliminate any and all evidence that there is some global initiative to take over the world.
Yeah, I know that these panels,
they're just waiting for the time to be right.
Right.
These inter-country, international panels that they do every year for climate change, they publish the hell out of everything those guys are doing. So
smoke and mirrors, my friend.
Yeah, I gotcha.
So again, according to geophysicist William M. Gray, global warming hysteria is an attempt by scientists, politicians, and government leaders to exercise political influence and force conformity.
Yeah, because scientists have so much political influence. We all know.
Oh yeah, and scientists are such conformists.
Yes.
Yeah, we're the invisible hand pushing the buttons of government. the last 10 years, the hostility of science, that was just screwing with you.
Right. Boy. Right.
Making things interesting. Mm-hmm. We don't want you to suspect that we're really behind it all.
I gotcha. You know what? If you get 10 scientists together in the same field, in about 5 to 10 minutes, they're going to start arguing.
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of conformity.
Right. And ironically, in science, this is a good thing.
Yeah, it is. And they recognize that.
And in science and philosophy, we call this making progress.
Now, this claim is a completely absurd. The idea that government leaders are using global warming hysteria as a means of exercising political influence, I think that's absolutely true.
Right.
Probably.
Right. Probably. I mean, it's almost become like a third rail in America at this point. I mean,
whether or not they're doing it on purpose.
It's actually kind of sad because environmentally conscious attitudes are associated with the Democratic Party and with being on the left. And it's, in general, it's dangerous to think that way. If there are things that we can do to, help what we're doing to the environment to make it better, it shouldn't be polarized by political parties. It should matter to everybody.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
I'm not sure what the difference between politicians and government leaders is, but that is what geophysicist William M. Gray said.
Well, politicians, that's just the public face. The people pulling the strings, those are the leaders.
Politicians would be the elected.
The corporate masters of Wall Street.
Gotcha. Yeah. The invest. Okay. Yeah. And the last one for world domination profit is conservative journalist James Dellingpole claims global warming is a tool used by governments to increase taxation and by corporations for profit. This one seems it could be plausible.
Well,
not necessarily intentional.
The current strategy of lowering carbon emissions is certainly extremely expensive. And it's got to come from somewhere.
Sure, and that supports increase in taxation.
Absolutely. Okay. So, I don't know. That doesn't sound completely crazy. Again, there's kind of a circularity here. If you look at the problem, again, with a rational view, like we've been trying to do, it seems that the answers involve more modest monetarily means of solving the problem, more realistic ways of solving the problem.
Well, and he also says that this is used by corporations to increase profits, but it really only seems like it would work for a few specific corporations exploiting.
Yeah, and I would think most corporations would say that this is going to hurt their profits, these efforts that, the crazy global warming people want to do.
Well, like, yeah, because it's an externality, right? And they're going to have to start paying for it at some point.
Like the company that makes those reusable handbags you can get at the grocery store has every reason to make you think that global warming's an issue. Or the people selling you a Prius, Norm.
Oh, crap.
They already got him. It's too late.
I just want to officially say that I like the cloth grocery bags. It just makes sense.
See?
I didn't bring up those two things.
This is how deep the mind control goes for Norm, though. He thinks it's his own idea.
I don't think I'm going to save the planet. I just think that it means I'm using a little bit less when I don't have to.
That's not the American way.
I'll bring a sticker next time.
Use what you need. We have that in the Denver area, right? With the water department.
Yeah.
What?
But at the same time, the vast majority of corporations stand to make no profit or to suffer from global warming.
Yeah, I can't imagine that making $1 grocery bags out of cloth is a real huge industry.
Yeah. I think so. And Norm, use what you need, please. Every night before I go to bed, I turn my house hose on and put it over my window because I like the sound of rain. It helps me sleep.
Just to check to see if there's a water shortage, you do that, right? Just leave the tap on. No, there's no shortage.
There's a water shortage? I just like the way it sounds.
In fact, one of the most powerful corporations in the world, gas corporations, have every interest in not wanting us to reduce carbon dioxide emissions.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah.
So
you see that with lobbyists and stuff. But
I think that in the battle of gas companies and biodegradable handbag companies, the gas companies might have better lawyers.
Well, and just to be clear, I want to say that if, like we talked about in our episode, we think that geoengineering is going to have to happen. So it probably will happen. And it's going to cost some money. It's not going to be as expensive as cutting carbon emissions enough to solve the problem, because that's not feasible.
Yeah.
But that money is going to have to come from somewhere. And look, if you talk to an economist that doesn't have a clear agenda of supporting corporations, I think most of them are going to agree that the economy should be structured so that it eliminates externalities by making them part of the system that the company is selling. So it should be embedded in the cost of the product. So that means if we're causing global warming by releasing various gases and that costs money to counteract, then the process of buying these fuels needs to have built into the price the cost of the solution to this problem. Make sense?
Yep.
Yes.
So that will cost these energy companies something, and even though it's going to be significantly less than unreasonably cutting carbon emissions, and they'll probably just pass that on to the consumer.
They will. I'll tell you, people hate that kind of idea, don't they? I mean, whenever you suggest that sort of thing, I don't know.
What kind of idea?
The idea of building a cost into that sort of thing I think it makes sense to do, but I really think that a more conservative person will not like that idea. It just doesn't sound good to him.
I think even conservative economists will tell you that externalities are ways of imbalancing the market. If you're interested in a free market, it needs to be a market where the price of something is real. The actual costs involved in that product or service needs to be incorporated in the cost to the customers, or else we don't know what we're buying, basically. Mm-hmm. That's what an externality is. So I think most economists are going to say that externalities are bad. Companies take advantage of them. It makes sense that they would try, but they're the market not working.
Right. Yeah. Well, given how companies take advantage of it, how likely do you think that is that sort of thing would be able to be changed?
I think it actually would be quite easy, because the alternative is going to be way more expensive.
Right. Especially
if we're talking about geoengineering to cool the planet as a result, while we do these other things.
It would definitely take some kind of legislation, right? I mean, this sort of thing wouldn't happen without that, would it?
I can't imagine it not involving the government, because there's not a whole lot of incentive for companies to get customers to just voluntarily give up money, because it's a very diffuse problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the kind of problem that human beings are bad at trying to fix. Problems that have long-term consequences that are not very easy to see, that don't affect me personally right away. So I can't imagine it not being related to legislation.
Yeah. Well, that will certainly present a pretty big hurdle to overcome, but yeah.
I actually don't think it will be.
I don't know.
Because the alternatives will be much more expensive.
I don't know. I just guess I don't have enough faith in people to do the right thing.
Well, when we start seeing some of the bad effects for sure, and you really start seeing people notice that, hey, this is real, well, hopefully it won't be too late. And again, with geoengineering, it probably won't be.
No.
But that's when you'll start to see things really change.
I hope so.
Okay, so the next category is one of my favorites, is the idea that global warming is a communist, socialist, left-wing plot.
But Glenn Beck said it was, though.
What the heck?
Glenn Beck seems like he would very much like this idea. I actually work with a communist.
Can this be the last time we mention that person's name?
We'll bleep it out.
Sure.
Okay.
I work with a communist. I asked her about this massive communist conspiracy. She had no idea what I was talking about.
She probably just missed that meeting, though.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, so this again is Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe. It's Inhofe. I don't know how to say that.
Inhofe!
Inhofe.
Also Japanese. I don't know at all. I'm sure he's a lovely man.
He wonders, quote, with all the hysteria, all the fear, all the phony science, could it be that man-made global warming is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on the American people? He goes on to describe the IPCC as activities as Soviet. Now, Soviet is basically, we kind of throw around the word Nazi today.
That's not a scare tactic at all.
But the word Soviet was a dirty word in his when he was a kid.
Oh, yeah. And it can still be used derogatorily now in the United States because it refers to the old communist regime of Russia.
Yep.
Certainly. And it it brings about all manner of ideas about the whole global warming movement, or the idea that global warming is happening, comparing it to Soviet, making it a political organization.
I really have trouble fathoming this connection.
It's just an ad hominem kind of attack, right, isn't it? It's they're just trying to poison the well by saying you're all a bunch of Soviets if you like this idea.
The basic idea of communism is for the government to take over the means of production, and I think Marx was mostly interested in necessities. Mm-hmm. And he had a problem with the existence of capitalists in the form of – we use the term capitalism in a broad way. But what he was referring to was the fact that there are people that make money off of their own money. And they make that by making a profit off of people. And so people are not actually – you know, the laborer is not actually getting paid their value. Whatever they're getting paid by definition is less than what their value is because somebody is making money off of them. And so, you know, it's based on exploitation of the workforce and the production of necessities. I don't see how it's related to solving a problem like global warming at all. I don't even understand how that could be related to it.
Well, I think
it's not. It's just a poison in the well tactic.
I think what it is, it's the language of propaganda.
Right.
There was a certain point where communist was a dirty word.
The United States does not engage in propaganda. Give me a break. That's ridiculous.
Please, name 100 ways. See, you can't do it.
During, we see the McCarthy area.
McCarthy era.
McCarthy era.
Google it. You know what he's saying.
You know, the Soviet scare and all those kinds of things. There was a language of propaganda that permeated the political sphere.
Right, right.
That didn't necessarily represent any realistic concept of what communism was.
Right.
Yeah, I think this is not peculiar to communism.
No, but I think he's just saying, you know, most communists will say that the kind of stuff that was happening, you know, under Stalin and like in old Soviet Russia was not a very good, representation of what communism is all about, at least as far as what Marx is saying.
Yeah.
But that's what people think it is about.
Yes.
I think when he's
and socialism is a completely different thing, I think.
Yes.
I
mean, there are successful socialist countries right now that we're friends with.
Yeah. So.
But I think when he's calling the global warming movement or the global warming hysteria Soviet, I think he's using it in the propagandist
concept. And that's
totally what it is.
I just want to be clear. There are two enormous problems with that. One is it has nothing to do with communism versus capitalism.
I agree.
Because capitalistic countries engage in propaganda just as much. It's just that the average American doesn't know that it's propaganda. Because we're in the country where the propaganda is pervasive, so you tend to believe it. And I can give you a clear example.
Let's hear it.
There is a tremendous amount of propaganda sponsored by the government in lots of forms involved in the war on drugs.
Oh, yeah.
Tremendous amount. About the overblown harms of drugs, drawing weak analogies. I mean, down to these TV commercials that show the guy in the car with the smoke that comes out that he's about to drive over the girl on the tricycle because he's high while driving. Come on, this is ridiculous, right? So, you know, there's propaganda in both kinds. But secondly, the idea that something is propaganda is based on the idea that it's not true.
Right.
So it seems to me that what he's doing is begging the question.
Yeah.
That he's saying we should be skeptical of this stuff because it's propaganda. But that's saying that it's not true because it's not true.
Yeah, yeah.
He's using propaganda to fight propaganda.
Which, that's kind of the point I was trying to
make. Fighting fire with fire.
Right.
Kind of the point I was trying to make is that the language of propaganda in our country gave the word Soviet a specific meaning.
Right, no, yeah.
And that's the meaning he's using. Next one. Journalist and author Melanie Phillips claims that global warming is a left-wing, anti-American, anti-West ideology, which goes hand-in-hand with anti-globalization and the belief that everything done by the industrialized world is wicked.
Well, she's right to some degree, the way people take it. But, you know, the idea that global warming itself as a scientific reality is, you know, is caused by this attitude, that's kind of ridiculous. Again, right. How the information is used politically, socially, I kind of agree with her.
Well, but also, I think I don't like things like anti-American. What does it even mean?
Yeah.
I hate when people say like that's just – it means nothing. It means whatever she thinks American it is to be American, it means that that's not that. That's all it really means.
Yeah. You know, just I was over the 4th of July, Laura and I were visiting with some of her friends. And, you know, as one of her friends gets drunk, her conservative side comes out more, conservative politically, not conservative like her, as in her actions. She was flashing us. Anyway, she was criticizing me because she was saying, you know, because I'm left that I don't love America. And she would say things just to get a rise out of me, like, you know, with a beer in her hand, she would say, you know, America is the greatest country on earth. And she'd look at me as if, you know, well, you don't believe that, do you? And I got to say, I don't believe that necessarily because I don't know about every of the, 200 countries on earth. And I don't know enough about them to say that ours is better than them automatically.
Look, it's likely that there is no greatest country in the earth.
Yeah, right? How do you even, what criteria do you use to rate that
by? I think we can all agree objectively that GDP is the basis for
Do I think America is a great country? Yes. Do I think it's the greatest country? Well, the facts are I don't have all the facts yet. And, you know, it's just funny. People have this team mentality, team spirit mentality.
Nationalism.
Yeah, absolutely. And that seems what this comet is about, really.
It is. Well, you know, that's a human problem, right? Tribalism. That's not going away. That's not going away.
And as we all know, caring about the environment is un-American.
Right.
That makes no sense at all.
What does it mean? Does it mean by logical implication that she believes the American way is to destroy the environment?
It's really not. You know, the United States, one of the things that we have to be quite proud of is our national park system.
Yeah.
Right.
And the fact that we just cordon off some of the best parts of our land and say, that's it. Sorry, you can't build there.
Yeah.
You can't open corporations there. You can't even build major roads through these. We're going to leave them natural, and people are going to enjoy them, and they're going to be refuges for animals, and that's American. So, you know, the idea that it's un-American to be concerned about the environment, it seems to me it's the opposite.
Yeah.
We're littered with national parks.
Yeah. Yeah, some people criticize that we have too many.
No way.
I think we have plenty of extra land that isn't in a national park if we wanted to continue urban sprawl. We don't need to be infringing on the national parks.
Yeah, as an avid hiker, I say let's keep our national parks.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good thing. Well, you're clearly a communist.
Yeah. For other reasons, though.
You even kind of look a little bit like Lenin.
Wow.
Oh, hey. Wait, John Lennon?
No.
Oh, damn it. No.
Okay.
Like, oh, okay.
According to Laurie McFarlane in Victoria's Time Colonist, I don't know what that is, but that's what it's cited as.
Well, what are you? Can you say it again?
According to Laurie McFarlane, she wrote an article in I believe this is a magazine called Victoria's Time Colonist.
Hmm.
Compares socialism and environmentalism, and finds some of the following in common: distrust of private and enterprise, faith in big government, and a disregard for wealth.
Well, it should be said right off the bat that wealth certainly is a correlate to greenhouse gas emissions. Right. Absolutely. Quality of life, the higher your quality of life, the higher you partake in the use of resources, and therefore the higher your carbon footprint. Absolutely.
Also, things like faith in government. I don't know if it's faith so much as I think that people who support doing something about global warming just understand that it's going to require governments cooperating together, all governments.
It has nothing to do with faith in government. It's that there really isn't an alternative.
As a matter of fact, I don't have faith in these governments. I just understand that they still need to do something together.
Yes. Well put. Well put.
Next one is, and this is actually the last one I have, former Australian leader of the opposition in the Senate, Nick Minchin, says that global warming is an effort by the left to deindustrialize the Western world.
What with trying to make a new green, Economy, yes.
And that's actually, when you really think about it, that is a very weird thing to say. Because what's really going to, in the long term, get us out of releasing carbon emissions is technology.
Right.
Yeah.
We're not going to give up having, you know, lights. No. We're not going to give up having air conditioning. Instead, we're going to find more cleaner ways of getting the energy.
Same thing with cars. We're not going to give up big cars. Eventually, you're going to have more fuel-efficient cars that are just greener.
Well, I mean, I think that Americans have an affinity for big cars too much, and the cars have gotten too big. So we might have to cut back to some degree. But that's not what he's talking about. He's talking about deindustrialization.
Yeah.
You know, imagining that we're all going to be hippies living in, you know, mud-constructed underground buildings because that's where you can get the geoengineering and the natural cooling of the earth. And we're going
to he's been talking to people
have
in
organic
Boulder.
Farms in the back. And you we're going need, to use...
He's been talking own, to people in Boulder, hasn't he?
Yes, we're going to use our own crop to feed those crops. And yeah, come on, this is not a hippie movement.
And you won't need modern medicine because you have herbs and spices.
Right. Yeah. Herbs and spices. Yeah, it's not a hippie movement. And that, I think, is a real mistake. You know, the idea that climate change is related to the bigger kind of environmentalist demographic is somewhat unfortunate. Because, again, one of the things that we don't like is that that demographic is kind of hippie-ish and that involves a certain amount of religious kind of ridiculous belief. Certainly not all of it by any means, but it does have some of that character. And, the association, the guilt by association seems to me, you know, to use another metaphor in the same sentence, be throwing the baby out with the bathwater on that one. I mean, it's a global issue. It's going to have to be realistically addressed. And I think that when you look at it, there are going to be solutions that work, that are economically viable. So yeah.
I think it's a matter of time. And
Silliness.
All right. I think that pretty much concludes Alternatives to Thought.
Nice job.
Those are some nice alternatives for people to consider.
Or not.
Right. Don't spend too much time doing it. We take no responsibility for any brain loss.
Yeah, some of these go ahead and think about. Others just forget. You've never thought about them at all.
We had more, but I started bleeding from my ears when I read them. So.
Right. We edited those out.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Chalmer.
Mm-hmm.
That was good.